Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
We are sitting with Mr. Dennis Kudla, who, no disrespect to the Behind the Racket, I mean, the cost stuff is pretty clean, I gotta tell you. It's not bad. How did you solve the mystery of Garrett Johns?
I just didn't want this to happen. This is like the eighth one.
Noah gave me, I watched Noah's match.
Yes.
So I feel like I got a little
next
bit of cheat code right there, but it stayed super aggressive and didn't let it breathe. So that was my game.
I love you. You know I love you. It's fine.
Okay.
It's fine.
Again, between podcasts. Yeah, it's fine. We've had six today, so
also,
that's
a lot of the guys. Like, this is my first match or second match since French.
Yeah.
So it's been a while.
Right.
So not having rhythm. Like yesterday in the beginning, I was like, I thought I played Kevin King. We played a practice match 4 days ago in Atlanta, and it was ugly.
Yeah.
So I did not expect to play that well.
How was the wedding? Just walk us through that.
Wedding was good. We did it in South Carolina, in Bluffton, where Isner got married, and the Biebs. So, yeah, it's big. That's not why we went.
Right, okay. We definitely need to make that clear.
Yeah, I like to just say that. but it was great. It was like a week-long thing with just family. I was an emotional wreck. It hit me way harder than I thought. I actually threw up on wedding day. And for the nerves, and then I ended up like crying for like half an hour with my parents.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wow, I feel great.
No. I did feel honored he allowed me to read his vows prior to it.
Yeah.
And you get emotional. I mean, this is crazy.
For sure.
Yeah.
Honestly, though, the next day, you're a husband. Do things change?
No, I don't think so. You the only thing that it's almost like a little bit of a hits the ego, because on wedding day, you truly think the world's revolving around you guys.
Yes.
And then it's over and you're like, wow, like nobody really cares. Like, okay, like whatever. So, I mean, it shouldn't change that much, I don't think. I mean, you should already have a life that feels like you're married. But
have you called her a girlfriend in this time?
I have. Yeah, I've messed up two or three times. She has too.
We
said it was weird. We're getting used to it now. We almost have to call each other like wife, husband, just to make sure that we don't forget. I've called her girlfriend. I've called her fiance. Like, fiance never really like was smooth for me.
That never took for me either.
I always forget. So like, I always said girlfriend and then just a wife. But wife, I almost feel like old saying that. I was like,
Dennis, I mean, you're not young.
I'm not
anymore.
Young.
I mean,
I'm not young. My hair will say that. I'm not young.
But the beard is magnificent. I mean, that whole process looks fantastic.
Everyone thinks I dye my beard, but it's all natural.
What I've respected, because everybody's football this, basketball that, you're like the only person I could talk hockey to. The only person that actually respects the sport of hockey. And that is like my dream come true.
It's incredible. It's such an underrated sport.
But you could play, actually.
I played street hockey. I couldn't skate. I'm a terrible skater. But like hitting, I played a lot of street hockey when I was younger with my brother. So rollerblading, I trusted a little bit more than skating. But I've always been kind of cautious when it came to like any kind of injuries, like my knees and stuff.
Yeah.
So I never like let it go.
So then when you see Sebi out there on the ice, and obviously he's very talented at the game. I mean, do you cringe a little bit just seeing him out there skating and playing a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, he's a Bruins fan, so I don't like anything that he talks about. I mean, you're an Islanders fan,
too. I was going to say, we took you out this year. That was tough.
Yeah, not a fan either. But, hey, Caps, they finally got the Cup one year. So
it's a big deal. Yeah. Before you were born, they had 4 years.
Yeah.
It was a big deal.
It was a big deal.
I remember that.
Hockey's just awesome. It's just the ultimate, like, I think they're some of the best athletes. They're always under the radar.
Yes.
They don't talk. Like, they just don't do much, and it's just, like, it's just badass.
Insane athletes.
Ridiculous. Athletes. I mean, I think tennis is the hardest sport in the world with all variable factors, and I put hockey at, like, 2 or 3 because boxing's questionable. Boxing could be 1 because they're crazy.
Really? You
MMA
think so?
MMA is up there. Yeah.
I think boxing, MMA, yeah. Because they're literally beating the crap out of each other, and then I think when it comes to, like, normal sports, I think tennis is the hardest of all variables, and then I'd put hockey because I think hockey does everything we do except for a big game is 15 minutes, so it's sprinting, but it's still like anything with the team I already put behind tennis.
How do you think I would take a hit from Chara skating 28 miles per hour?
Well, he'd probably skate under his legs.
Barzell style.
Yeah, exactly. So,
well, you have to warm up here. You are going to be playing in the 90 degree heat here indoors at Cary. It's obviously that we're doing the best we can right now, and I know That's true in so many different levels right now, Dennis.
Absolutely.
If you're the commissioner in charge of tennis right now, how do you improve the quality of life? How do you improve the quality of opportunity for players at the challenger level as somebody who has seen some of the peaks over the years?
I mean, obviously it's a tough question with just every – I mean, first and foremost, I feel like it comes to just how everything's run as kind of a business in tennis. And I don't think if tennis was put into how other businesses are run, like I don't think it's run well. But money is big, but where is that money coming from and how is it distributed? I think you should be 200, 300 in the world and should at least be able to afford a coach. You should be able to say you're 200 in the world and like I can afford a home and not have that. It's just kind of shocking to me how much we put into it. But improving it, I mean, okay, you get your free hotels. I mean, more travel grants would be awesome, especially the way flights are going. You know, not like airlines care about what we're doing. They're like, $600 domestic? I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, when I first started at 18, I mean, my flight from Tampa to Atlanta the other week was the same price as when I went to Australia when I was 18. I was like, it's absurd.
Yeah.
So stuff like that is kind of big. I mean, I would think I'd almost take in two scenarios of either would you rather have the same prize money we have now, but then all expenses covered, or everything we still pay for, and it's at your way of saying it, but you have more prize money, so you use the money as you like.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know which one I would take, but I feel like those situations need to happen in order for everyone's life to be where it should be in the Challenger Tour. It's a long way from that. I don't know if it'll ever happen, but it just is what it is. I mean, I think players need to come together. I think they're trying to right now.
Yeah.
I think a lot of talk, but no action is just not going to get anywhere. I mean, unfortunately, right now you look at tournaments and the prize money's dropped, but guys, it's still loaded draws, and I'm like, we're not really helping our cause right now.
Yeah.
So it just is what it is, but we'll see what happens.
It is what it is.
Unfortunately,
a top three phase of 2020.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, we play because we kind of have to, but for a big change in what we have to do for it, a lot of talking, and you need negotiating power. But I just think as players, as a union, as players just like being players, we don't really have much negotiating power, and we're not really I don't know what we could do to change anything without unfortunately not playing. So we'll say I'd rather not do that, but if it comes to that, I mean, then it's just gonna see who's I don't know if I can curse on this or not.
Yeah, you can.
Who got the balls to do it, you know? Like, not cursing, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, we've done a little bit worse than that.
Yeah, we've definitely done worse than that.
Who's got the balls to not play and do all that stuff, so is what it is, again. And, yeah, the future holds some questions and some answers that we need.
Thanks for being a part of it, Dennis.
Thank you. What's your guys' thought on that?
Oh, we've done several podcasts on that.
We don't have to go back to that right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
But if you want to go back and listen to the whole archive.
I do need to. I do need to.
I mean, you're certainly welcome.
I've just started like listening to more audiobooks and podcasts, so I need to get on it.
Yeah, I hate being alone, and that's the story of my life, so yeah. I just listen to podcasts. I pretend that I have friends.
We'll talk about that later.
Okay.
I just started listening to my first audiobook, so David Goggins Can't Hurt Me. At all. That is crazy. All
right. There we go.
Unbelievable guy.
David Goggins, you got your shout out on Behind the Racket Pod.
There are at least three people who are going to be so excited now.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dennis.
You got it.
Nathaniel Lammons, Nate Lammons, joining us. Listen, I'm not going to try to make fun of Noah here where I absolutely could, but as Hunter Reese just said as you walked up, I mean, you are a specimen. Like, you are absolutely ripped, and I'm a little bit terrified of you. I got to be, especially with the beard, the whole look right now is terrifying.
It's also groomed.
Yes.
He's a behemoth, but it's groomed, so you see the neatness of it.
Yes.
Which is
premeditated behemoth, yeah.
How long does it take you to shave? Like, when do you do it?
I guess I give it a trim every couple weeks, probably.
Please
keep
tell me
in,
you use oil.
Check.
Please tell me you use, like, something
really just
on
condition.
It.
Conditioner. Yeah, nothing crazy.
So you put the hair conditioner in it?
Yeah.
Oh.
How do you handle it with the mask? I mean, what's the process?
It's terrible. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure, actually, if you can notice it now because I trimmed it yesterday, but the, like, bottom of the beard starts to sort of, like, bend and go down.
Does it get, like, itchy and, like, hurts almost?
It does get itchy. Yeah. Real itchy. Yeah, nightmare. It's been a new struggle having all the masks.
It's a real tough life.
Real tough life to have a beard right now.
But the worst is when the beard's under it and you just see a little bit of it.
Yeah, and it looks ridiculous with the mask. It's like peeking out the bottom, yeah.
How do I put this? You've kind of come out of nowhere to get where you've been.
That's a fair statement.
You know, I remember you showing up in, I think it was Charlottesville one year, and I'm just like, who the hell is that guy?
Yeah.
You're not just a guy. You know, do you have an appreciation of that journey yet?
Yeah, definitely. I think it really stems back from college. I mean, I really came in as irrelevant to the college lineup freshman year, and by the end of it was contributing. So I think that time growing up and in college really gave me a different perspective than a lot of players, especially guys still playing.
Mm-hmm.
Most guys were kind of studs the whole way.
Now you're just a stud in real life, like an actual stud.
I like to think so, but
you just picture him with like Captain America,
right?
Like,
exactly.
Armor.
Considered that for Halloween, actually. Not about it. The version where he has a beard later.
Yeah, right.
On
of course,
series.
Sure.
Yeah, obviously.
So is that why you're a nice person?
That's probably part of it. Yeah, you know, I wasn't always, you know, towards the top of things, so it never had that ego.
And then you fight being with Bambo and being next to him.
And fighting his ego. I have to counterbalance it. Yeah, exactly.
Is it true you are, like, I do think of you, all kidding aside, as, like, Texan. Accurate?
Pretty Texan, yeah. I grew up in the cities, but...
The way he said that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it accurate that you guys had multiple levels of having to learn Texas history? Not just American history, but actual... I was told that
like
that
the
was...
the Alamo?
Like literal Perfect, Texas actually. History.
Yes. So in junior high, I forget what exactly the circulation was. This is a great question.
Yeah,
I haven't
gotten
this one before. Yeah, I think the history class that we took in junior high went from world history, U.S. history, and Texan history.
Yeah.
So we had to learn sort of, the different... you know, battles and whatnot.
Oh my God, the Alamo was fantastic. It's a square and there's like a subway next to it now.
Yep.
It's I
think as a kid I always imagined it bigger.
Yes.
And you go there in person and it's tiny.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's really small.
Like I it
big
you
significance,
really,
small,
yes,
like, physical.
But you think then about actually what happened there and you see how small it was. It's shocking,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah, it is.
Right. For it's sure. Like when you meet Mike for the first time.
Listen, I've been ripping on him for the last half an hour, so it's okay. He can make one fat joke, and that's totally fine. That's also why I'm so impressed by you. So the real question here, the serious question for you, Nate, if you're commissioner of the sport of tennis.
Yeah, is that a hurricane outside?
No, it's just rain. It's fine. Let's not joke about hurricanes here because we've actually had hurricanes for three straight years before this one.
That's true. Sorry.
So, okay.
A huge fan in here makes it feel like a hurricane.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But if you're commissioner of tennis, how would you improve the quality of life and the quality of condition for challenger level players?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a tough question. I think I think the easiest answer probably is more money. Just maybe not just on the surface level of, you know, having more money come in and just the comfort level of that. I think it's more just like what you can do with that in life, you know, is whether it's a nicer place or something like that. But I think that's a kind of a cop-out answer personally, because I think that's not like a real solution to anything. Just saying more money is just kind of everybody's complaint in general, probably. But practically what that means, I think for me, the ability to play closer to home would be great. Whether that means more of the same size tournament, more of the larger ones, I think, personally, I feel the struggle of all the Oracle events being, you know, kind of taken off. I feel like they did a great job. They were bigger events as well, and they were close to home, and there were a bunch at different levels, which I thought was great for the sport, great for American players. So I feel like if I could get something more like that, where there's more events at more levels, whereas I think kind of right now, especially in Europe, I feel like if it's not a Challenger 125, it's a Challenger 80, and there's no sort of in between. Especially with doubles, the difference between an 80 and a 125 is huge. Money-wise and point-wise, probably the same for singles, I'd imagine. But
no, it's a big deal. But especially, I mean, for you guys making, I think, like $1,500 if you win this, you know, per person.
Right.
You know, once you're getting up to a 125, I mean, you're looking
it's
at
500 some, for a first round.
Right. You're looking at some real cash at that point. So
Yeah, money trees. I believe Kendrick Lamar talked about money trees, and we don't necessarily have that opportunity just for them to be popping up.
Coming from a guy who's so white, he's literally fading away right now.
It's terrible. You going to take me through a workout later so I can
I'd actually be happy to work off some of this fat? I've made an appointment later at the hotel.
Okay.
Like to join.
Yeah, sounds good. I appreciate it, Nate. Thanks so much for joining us.
No worries.
So, beginning of my tennis broadcasting career, this man played a big part, Alex Bogomolov Jr., a match against Bradley Klon at Winnetka 2013. my first viral moment when you just, apparently, I didn't know until later, I thought you had just quit the tennis match, and you had an injury, and you'd apparently previously disclosed that, but I had no idea, and so all of a sudden people are showing clips of me saying, "What the hell is this guy doing? Quitting a tennis match?"
They don't care about you, but it's just like you meet
it's all
this
about
guy
me.
All on the booth alone.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Everybody needs their moment. You know? No. Yeah, you know, honestly, it wasn't all injury, and it wasn't all, you know, whatever happened on the court. It was like a mixture of everything that kind of went on that week, and I felt, you know, I felt a certain way, you know, certainly after changing nationalities and then that was my first tournament back in the U.S. and Winnetka, which I've played my whole life, and I've been around USTA my whole life, and then coincidentally I actually withdrew from a doubles match after my first singles because my back was spasming the whole week there, and against Bradley Klon, it was just one of those things where enough was enough. And I'm not the most proud of it. I think that if there was ever a match to walk out of, that was probably it.
I have a more serious question, though. The bun.
Yeah.
Do you let it fly sometimes? How long does it take you in the morning?
I'm getting so sick and tired of it. the things that keep the hair up and stuff. I'm running out. Sometimes I can't find it. I have to use a rubber band.
Can you take it out for us right now?
Yeah, man. Look.
Let's see this.
It's very long.
Wow.
Oh, it's glorious, though.
It is fantastic.
It's lion-esque.
It's
lioness. Like, yeah.
Yeah, no, that looks fantastic.
And do you do stuff to it? You put product
Never.
In?
No. I mean, sometimes shampoo and conditioner, but that's about it. I don't know. I feel like I can play better tennis with it.
I've heard players who turn into coaches say this, that they feel they're actually better at the sport after they give it up because of the fact that they're just playing loose and relaxed. Is that
it's
accurate for you?
It's 100%
true. Oh, my God. Watching him hit balls right now inside. Yeah. I didn't miss a ball.
It's
100, smacking it's balls
100%.
Around.
There's no pressure. You don't care what racket you play with. You don't care what strings you play with. You come out, swing some balls, and it's all about a feeling that you have that day of, you know, how well. You're always hitting well as a coach. There's never really pressure for you to you know. to play extraordinary and win. You're just trying to keep the ball in play.
How weird is it for you to be on the other side of things, but at this level here, you know, being here with Jack, obviously, and with Throw a little bit, and just being in this kind of atmosphere?
Yeah. No, you know how this year, this whole year went, you know, it's been a little challenging for all of us, but to still be able to kind of finish the year off and have tournaments to play, I think it's a positive. But definitely to be around the guys and kind of be back in the swing of things at a challenger level here in the USTA is also good, because I kind of grew up in this, so it's been good.
You and Jack both have pretty strong personalities, I think would be the way I would put it, Bogey. How do you manage those moments when you guys both have strong personality moments, if you will?
I mean, we go at it. We definitely go at it, and it's a healthy. Healthy thing, I think. I think expression is always the best thing, communication between a player and the coach. But like you said, his personality is strong, and I have to respect the fact that he has his opinions about what he thinks is the best for his career. And I'm just, you know, I'm trying to help in the way of, you know, with certain experience as well. And we definitely clash over some things, but I think mainly because we're so competitive.
Yeah.
So.
Last question before the final one. You always look like you're ready for a pickup basketball game.
Yes.
And I saw you in Del Rey.
Yes.
And you were good. Yes. Is this a passion of yours? Do you actually love it?
I love it. Probably like it more than tennis. I love it more than tennis.
Really?
Yeah.
And team is what?
What's your team? Well, you know, I've always loved Miami Heat even before LeBron got there. I used to go to the pink arena there before the American Airlines arena. And like with guys like Rashawn Leonard and obviously Tim Hardaway, but...
Did you just say Vashawn Leonard?
Do you remember Vashawn Leonard?
I do. I was at the University of Illinois, so I know Big Ten basketball. He played at Minnesota. So, I mean, like, yeah.
Vashawn Leonard used to have unbelievable, yeah. We try to play on the weekends, you know, in a safe way.
It's tough.
Keep the thumb safe, I think.
Yeah, yes. You go out for rebounds with a fist, fist.
You know I know Kay Nunn and Myers Leonard.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I was the public address announcer for Illinois basketball.
I hope Myers stays in the Heat.
I hope so, too. He's a good guy.
He's a good guy. And he's a good guy to have on the team.
Yes, he is. All right, so the serious question as we let you go and enjoy the day here in Cary that's pouring outside, but if you're commissioner of tennis, how do you improve the quality of life, quality of level for challenger-level players as somebody who's seen all sorts of different levels in your career?
That's a great question. I think there's a lot of different different areas that obviously can get better, but you know with this pandemic they become even more more serious, and I think mostly it has to be in the best interest of the players, because the players make the circuit. And I think that if next year sort of becomes a little bit more normalized than back to regular schedule, I think the best thing with challengers would be obviously the number one thing is increase of prize money, the opportunity to have a good schedule set for players that are coming from Latin America and having a lot more, I think, challengers on hard. So having a good balance, I think. I think it's tough with the travel for a lot of guys. So I think kind of, I always thought that maybe even, you know how they had the challengers final.
Yeah.
Mm. Final.
Yes.
I think doing a lot more of those kinds of things mid-season.
Yes.
I think taking advantage of the opportunity, but now that everything is fresh and it's starting over again, the way that the clubs approach it, of how to run the challenger, I think those are big things. And but definitely start getting more innovative with things that are going on in this world and kind of improving the calendar in general. And obviously eliminating the very lower. The very lower part of the challenger, I guess, steps and kind of start increasing from there.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. You know, just keep the basketball game active. And maybe we'll join you at some point. I've seen Noah play. He's not terrible.
No, I see you shoot. You were shooting.
You can shoot a little bit.
You were shooting.
All right. Thanks, Bogey.
Appreciate it. Guys. Thanks.
We are joined. Actually, this is, now that I think about it, this is you did the podcast with me after Noah had left in Australia. So it was just me and you.
Last year, this year.
I think it was this year.
Yeah.
But Luke Bambridge rejoining us here on the podcast.
He's an all-time favorite for me. I don't know about you.
Because of the fact you weren't there, and so the podcast was actually better?
I actually just like him as a person.
Oh, I don't.
Oh.
But it's...
Stuff.
The disappointment.
And then I hate you, though. It's like this triangle of hatred.
As we were talking a little bit earlier, you have spent the chunk of the last 2 years away from the challenger level. What's it like being back here and having to deal with me?
I think it's a perk of the playing the challenges in the U.S.
If not the only perk.
I think that the challenges in the U.S., they definitely have their pros and cons. Pros being, I feel like I came through this like U.S. challenger circuit kind of swing, played a lot of them, always feel comfortable playing in them. Not necessarily saying I've got loads of good results of them, but just feel comfortable playing in them. A lot of people that I know, friendly faces, obviously yourself, Mike, commentating on the matches. Not that I play on center court much.
No, trust me, that's by design.
That's for the best.
Yeah. But no, I always enjoy it. And when those challenges, some of the challenges have gone on in the past, and I've been at some ATPs elsewhere, I've seemed to miss them.
You know, one text me.
Mine is like Tiburon. Yes. I always miss Tiburon. I do miss Kerry. I really like how the center court is. It's a really nice center court.
Yes.
And they make it feel like a homely tournament, obviously different with COVID this year, but I feel like they usually put in a lot of effort.
Are you, is it true that you are marrying someone in Texas specifically, though, to become a citizen, so you maybe will get a few more wild cards here in the States? Is that accurate?
That's incorrect, because all the wild cards in the States go to Noah.
No, they don't. No, they don't.
On the doubles side, they do.
I've heard there was a lot of shit talking when the doubles wild card was distributed to Noah Rubin this past 2 years.
Yeah, no, last 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't complain. I played U.S. wild cards last 2 years at U.S. Open. One win, one loss.
Yeah, which one did you win? Can you remember?
We just scraped by against Ty and Noah.
Okay.
But I'm telling you, it was just... It was 7-6 in the third, so.
Yes, but I knew the answer to that. Okay, I just want to make sure I
didn't want to sound like that guy.
No, it's okay. I'm that guy.
Although I do like being that guy.
I'm a little tired right now. I've been beaten up more than a few times today. You know, the accent, you talk really fast, you like making jokes. You're actually a really thoughtful person. During World Team Tennis, we had some deep conversations. Mm-hmm. Is it all a front?
No. I think that the banter side of me is more of a front, but not necessarily. Loads of people will know that caring side to me. There's probably a few players on the tour who will know that side. Liam Brody being one, and Nate Lamons being another, and there's a few. But no, I just like to. I prefer private messages for more important, meaningful things. So, for instance, you say something on a group chat about BTR or whatever it may be, I will message you privately.
Right.
Or rather than saying it on the group, I'll message you privately to say, hey, thanks for your hard work.
You don't want to show your sensitivity.
No, I think it's a token gesture sometimes if you say it on a group chat.
I 100%.
To say,
I did appreciate it a lot.
Well done. And also... I think during lockdown, we had a phone call, like 25-minute phone call, just talking about what you're up to and the stuff that you're doing, putting in, and you asking me what I was up to. So, no, I just like to reach out to a few people, and it's not everyone I do that to, but yeah.
And to get into this group, you said Brody, you said Lamons, you all have to be perfectly groomed, as we hear a broken rack in the background.
It's just Mitch.
Just Mitch.
No big deal.
So you all have to be, like, it's a great fade.
Yeah.
This is nice. I want you to tighten this up a little
bit. I do need to tighten up the beard.
A little bit. But everything else is really nice.
I think it seems with those two names that just go out there, they do...
Brody's the pinnacle.
Yeah,
he really is.
Brody is the Don't tell him that, though.
Oh, he knows.
I mean, he knows. Well aware. Yeah, that's how he walks around.
He loves himself. But no. He's one of those people. He has a huge front as well. Huge front of just like banter.
Yeah.
I don't care. Banter, and then. But obviously, so much stuff's gone on in the years between me and him.
Yeah.
Knowing deep, meaningful stuff between us. So. Both of us can cut through each other's
egos.
Egos, and yeah.
I will say, as a compliment to the both of you, there are four people, tennis players, to whom my daughter has FaceTimed or WhatsApp video chatted, and you are amongst the two.
That's a compliment.
That means something.
Yeah, it means something.
And that's the first compliment I've gotten in a few weeks.
Mike did say that you were Marnie's best friend.
It's true.
Noah, so
I made it.
So yeah,
I made it.
You've made it.
I don't.
That's
really.
The pinnacle.
Yeah,
that's the pinnacle.
Yeah. All right. So the big question here: you have obviously seen some of the peaks now, having deep runs and slams. You've won an ATP title. Mm-hmm. You've also spent a lot of time in challengers around the world. What do you think is the best way right now to improve the quality of life, the quality of opportunity for challenger level players?
I think obviously the obvious answer is more money. But I think it takes winning so much at challenger level to break through to ATP. I don't know how many wins it is on the points wise on the single side, but on the double side, there's literally, you see it in the points total. There's a threshold of what you can reach. And I think it highlights more on the double side because it's 45 points to win a round of a 250, and that's like making final of a 80. So that's 3-1 ratio right there that you have to win more matches.
Yeah.
And I've had this conversation multiple times how I did it, and then also with Nate Lamons and what he has to go through and everything like that. And he's like, I've just got to win like 4 or 5 challenges in a row, and that's like. To get your head around that's absurd. That is a concentration for... It's not as physical, obviously, as the single side, but just concentration-wise, because it comes down to like 1 or 2
tiebreakers.
Yeah.
It's 10-point
tiebreakers. Yeah. It's really tough. Yeah. And you can go on losing streaks in anything. So I think the points differential is really difficult. And I wouldn't be necessarily so against actually making the doubles points at 250s a different breakdown to what a singles 250 is, because I actually think making semis of a or making final of a challenger in singles is somewhat easier to making quarters or semis of a 250.
Yeah.
So it's almost the other way. But I do think on the double side, I wouldn't be opposed to a different breakdown, which would therefore allow more players to break through quicker and easier.
Yeah.
You still have to win a lot of matches. And there usually is one team a year, 1 or 2 teams a year, that do the challenger breakthrough. So, for instance, 2 years ago, it was myself and Johnny O'Mara and Vliegen and Gilles. Last year, it was Purcell Saville.
Kravitz.
And then, obviously, Kravitz Mies. Yeah. That was a couple of years ago as well. And then this year, you're looking at Behar Escobar, who have won so much at challenger level. But is that wrong that it's only 2, maybe 3 teams maximum every year to kind of break 70? Like, that could be, that's difficult. And it's just a different look at, the double side, which not everyone sees sometimes. I know Noah has made a huge effort to incorporate doubles and stuff projects he's doing. We appreciate that. But I think that's just something different that you could say separate to the money, because you'd give yourself more opportunities at 250s to earn the money.
Well, I think it kind of comes into the idea of making it. Everybody talks about the tours, the ATP tour.
Yeah.
You're fighting for 80 spots in the world, basically, and doubles is basically even less at that point. So why is that only making it? And it comes down to money and distribution of that, but that's so sad. I mean, we have 600 very talented tennis players fighting for 80 spots. Mm-hmm. Everybody's questioning, why aren't you there yet? And that's what I think it comes down to.
Yeah.
And the difference in level, let me tell you, it's not much at all. It really isn't. It really, really isn't.
Your sister, we're going to let you go here because you answered the serious question. If I remember, your sister was doing a little bit of a toy business in England. I followed and I was trying to support it. How's she doing with that?
I'm actually not sure. She's actually stayed quiet about it.
Really?
I think it'll come back up over Christmas.
Okay, because I listen.
Christmas is a good time of year.
Marnie has gotten a little bit away from the age that she was reaching out to, but I mean, listen, Peppa Pig.
Yeah.
I mean, I know all of the characters so incredibly well, and what's the one with the fairy land? It's by the
Mike
same people.
A lot of this himself when Marnie's
listening. Ben and Holly.
Okay.
Ben and Holly.
You're talking a language I don't speak.
It's made by the same people who do Peppa Pig. I mean, are you?
I'm familiar with Peppa Pig.
Peppa Pig's great.
Yeah.
I mean, 5-minute cartoons for kids. Are you kidding? Like everything.
I'm sweating right now.
Everything in Great Britain is a little bit better. I'm just saying, in terms of the kids' comedy.
That's why you and I don't live there.
I wish someday that
you're
I can.
You're going to be allowed in.
Probably not. Bambo, thank you. Any trades that we need to make while we're podcasting?
We'll talk about it after. Okay. I'm in for Tariq Hill.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.